Well, thank you very much, ladies. Very beautiful song. Has a lot of good meaning to the words there. So, one afternoon, there was this fox, and he was walking through the forest, just minding his own business. But he was very energetic, very lively, and he was hopping and prancing around. And as he was making his way through, he saw a bunch of grapes. Nice, fresh, luscious grapes hanging just a little bit above his head. And he knew that if he tried really, really hard, he could get a run and jump and he could grab those grapes. And those grapes would quench his thirst. So he gets back, he runs and he jumps, and he just misses. Not a problem. He's determined. He gets back, he runs and he jumps again, misses, lands and stubs his toe. He says, forget it. Forget it. Those grapes are probably sour anyway. I don't need those. And he turns and walks away. There's a lesson. Do we ever consider quitting? I didn't say what. Just quitting. Just give up. Just I'm done. Do we ever just go along and we're in the middle of something and we have a great, enthusiastic start, but then we quit. We give up. Well, let me ask you a different question. Now, this might sound a little strange, but bear with me. The fox story is strange. Have we ever thought about us personally asking ourselves the question, can I walk on water? What? Can I walk on water? Well, I'm sure that at one time or another, every one of us sitting in this room, doesn't matter our age, we have all experienced anything, the starting of anything, whatever it is, with great enthusiasm. And then somewhere along the way, something happened. We stubbed our toe. And what? We quit. We give up. We said it's not worth it. Well, I did a Google search. Love Google. So I did a Google search on this phrase, things we start but don't finish. That is amazing. I thought my computer was going to explode. Now, unless I read it wrong, and I could have, but if I read it right, it showed 142 million articles or quotes or something to do with that phrase. 142 million. I want to just share just a few of them with you, just a handful of them here. The first one that popped up, or one of the first, was diets. Oh, wow, diets. Now, I won't ask for a show of hands, but how many of us have been this year right in the middle of a diet and quit? Again, I'm not going to ask for a show of hands. How about our exercise or workout plan? We probably all started that sometime along the way, and we've quit. What about med school? There's been some people who go to med school. Some of them finished, some of them quit. How about college in general? Another one that came up on the list was running a marathon. And they had some facts on this one. It says the highest percentage of people to drop out of a marathon is at mile 18. Mile 18. So they don't know why for sure, but they say, and this is probably an attempt at humor, they say that it's your body's way of saying this is a bad idea. So, I don't know. They say that the key to training for a marathon, again, I think this is their attempt at humor, it says, is to run 13 miles, one direction, and take all your money and all your cell phone and leave it. You have to go back to get it. Yeah, I didn't think it was very funny either. But a few more is reading a book. How about writing a book? Trying to sign up at healthcare.gov. Yeah, it's on the list. Now this one here was interesting. Watching Lord of the Rings trilogy. Probably most everybody here has seen that or part of it. And the facts they gave with this is 40% of the people say that that's the greatest movie series ever, while 60% say, could this movie be any longer? Could it have any more endings? And then the final one that I want to share with you on the list was getting all the way through the miniseries Lost. Then it goes on to say, the person who added it says, never have I been so captivated by the beginning of a series, or so weary, so bewildered, and so disappointed by the end of the series. By the last season, I was like, would everyone just please die? So this could be over. You know, we have to look at things as they are. But in our life of keeping the faith, which is what we're here, it's what we're about, it's who we are, trying to be the right Christian, the Christian that God had said we should be, the example that Jesus Christ set, we have the experiences of starting some things and not finishing them. We're all guilty of this. Maybe we have resolved to read the Bible through in a year. Or maybe we resolve to memorize more scriptures. Maybe to give up a very destructive or even sinful habit. Even to be a little more generous in our tithes and offerings. Maybe this hits all of us. But I know that we all have different things going on in our lives. Every day, we face certain things. And at times, we have a lot of trouble just staying with it. It's tough. It's very possible, even right now, just in this short introduction, as we're sitting here, some of us have been thinking about quitting something. Now, hopefully, it's quitting a bad habit or there's something good. So today, I want to talk about a couple aspects of faith. I want to talk about the kind of faith that not only helps each and one of us in making a commitment, but then the type of faith of seeing that commitment through, all the way through to the very finish, whatever that might be. There's a certain story taken from Matthew, Mark, and John that Christ tells, and I want to take a look at that today, and this deals with this topic of faith. It also deals with several other little issues, or not issues, but lessons that we'll pick up on as we go through this. So if you will, start turning to Matthew chapter 14. We'll see here that it's not just making the decisions that counts with God, although that is important, but it is seeing those decisions through. It's enduring. So let's take a look at the story here in Matthew chapter 14. I'm going to read from verses 22 through 33. I just want to read them first, and then we're going to kind of break these down and look at them in a little more detail. Matthew 14, starting verse 22. Immediately, Jesus made his disciples get into the boat and go before him to the other side, while he sent the multitude away. And when he had sent the multitude away, he went up to the mountain by himself to pray. Now when evening came, he was alone there. But the boat was now in the middle of the sea, tossed by the waves, for the wind was contrary. Now in the fourth watch of the night, Jesus went to them, walking on the sea. And when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were troubled, saying, "It is a ghost." And they cried out for fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them, saying, "Be of good cheer. It is I, do not be afraid." And Peter answered him, and he said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come to you on the water." So he said, "Come." And when Peter had come down out of the boat, he walked on the water to go to Jesus. But when he saw that the winds was boisterous, he was afraid and began to sink. He cried out, saying, "Lord, save me." And immediately Jesus stretched out his hand, and he caught him, and he said to him, "O you of little faith, why did you doubt?" And when they got into the boat, the winds ceased. Verse 33. Then those who were in the boat came and worshiped him, saying, "Truly, you are the Son of God." Now, I'm sure we've read that story many, many times in our Christian career, if you will. But here in Matthew 14, what we see is a rather infamous story of a man who faltered in faith. It was none other than Peter. Everybody, I've not talked to anybody that doesn't like Peter. Everybody loves Peter. Because I think it's very easy to see a lot of ourselves in Peter, in his actions, in his attitude. He's a man big on promises, but sometimes he's a little short on execution. Does that not describe us sometimes? His aspirations are often loftier than his accomplishments. Peter, that wasn't his real name. His name, this was the name that Jesus gave him, and of course Peter meant rock, but Simon was his real name. So when we think about Peter here, we can almost think of him as two people trapped in the same body. Think about it that way for just a minute. Just a little history here. You don't have to turn there, but I'll read to you Mark 3, verse 16. It says, "Simon, to whom he," Christ, "gave the name Peter," kind of backs up what we just said. And then John 1, verse 42 says, "And he brought him to Jesus. Now when Jesus looked at him, he said, 'You are Simon, the son of Jonah. You shall be called Cephas,'" which is translated "a stone." So Jesus, he renamed Simon from the Aramaic word Kepha, and it means rock, or Cephas meaning stone. So this was an extraordinarily event, if you will, that Christ did this, because back in this time, rock was not even a common name that Christ would use, that anybody used. So Jesus did this. And he did this not to give Simon a strange name, but he did this to identify his new status among the apostles. When God changes a person's name, he also changes their status, who they really are, what they are. Now, getting back to the story here, if you'll remember back right before the crucifixion, what did Peter say? Peter told Christ, he said, "I will never deny you." He said, "Even if everyone else does, I will not deny you." That was Peter, the rock, speaking. Yet that very same night, what'd he do? He denied Christ three times. Three times he denied Christ. That was Simon. Peter in Acts chapter 2 is the first one to declare that God has included the Gentiles in the gospel counts. That's Peter, the rock, the one who stands up for the truth. But later, he refuses to eat with the Gentiles because he's afraid of what the Jews will say or do. Paul calls him out. But back in Matthew 14 here, we just read the story which says, "Jesus, if that's you," this is Peter, "I'll walk on water to you." That's pretty strong. He's the only one to show this kind of courage at this particular time. That's Peter. Then, right in the middle of this event that's going on, he gets scared and he starts to sink. That's Simon. Like many of God's people today, Peter has a faith side to him, and he also has a fear side. Those two can't go hand in hand. When I was much, much younger, and maybe some of you remember this too, McDonald's had a burger, and it was called the McDLT. Do we remember the McDLT? Some of you younger people are confused. The McDLT, I think that was the real burger innovation. It came to you in a little styrofoam container. This side was hot. It had the burger on it. This side was cold. It had the lettuce and the condiments. That way you got a fresh, hot burger anytime you ordered it. Put them together and there you have the best burger ever. They don't have that anymore. Peter's kind of like that, though. Think about Peter as a McDLT. He has a hot side to him, and he's on fire for Christ and everything that goes on, and then all of a sudden, he's cold. He doesn't want anything to do. He denies. But you notice what he's not? He's not lukewarm. What's God say? He said, I would rather that you be hot or cold, not lukewarm. I think a lot of the time, you know, we're a lot like Peter. Do we ever feel like we should have two names? I think I need two names. And I would love for one of them to be something like a rock. I like that. That's pretty solid. But then other times, I feel like a wimpy Christian. I don't know what the name for that is, but it probably fits. So right here, in Matthew chapter 14, in verses 22 through 24 that we've just started here, we just read here, Jesus has just finished feeding the 5,000 with 5,000 plus with five loaves and two fish. And then in verse 22, it says, immediately. Okay, that's important. Immediately. He made the disciples get into the boat and they had to go. They left out across the sea. They went to their destination was the other side. Then he dismissed the crowd. And then what'd he do? Well, we see that he went up to the mountain. In verse 24, we read that the boat by this time was a long way from land. But in the middle of the sea, it was being beat severely by the waves because the wind was against them. So what we see is that he sent the disciples into a storm. Oh, did we ever think about reading it that way? Well, we'll keep on going here and see how this turns out. Now, I'm sure that we've all heard the phrase, the safest place to be is in the will of God, right? True. That is true. But sometimes people confuse that to mean that everywhere God puts us or allows us to go or end up is always the safest, easiest place to be. Sometimes we confuse that to mean it's going to be a walk through the rose garden. It's not. Here, they obeyed the direct command of Christ. And guess what? Just hours later, they ended up in a massive storm as a result. We need to understand this analogy. So whenever storms hit us in our life, and they do, I guarantee you, if not all of us, the majority of us are going through storms right now. But when they hit, then we don't assume that we're out of the will of God. And that's important. That's what we get from this analogy. Certain storms are part of the will of God for each and every one of us, because God is not just doing something for us. He's actually doing something in us. And that takes testing. And it takes trying. And it takes you and I to build patience, faith, endurance. Join me, if you will, in Acts chapter 20. Acts chapter 20, we'll read a couple of verses here, starting verse 22. Notice what Paul says. Acts chapter 20, starting verse 22. And now, compelled by the Spirit, I am going to Jerusalem. Think about Paul stating this right now. I am going to Jerusalem, not knowing what will happen to me there. I only know that in every city the Holy Spirit warns me that prison and hardships await me. Did you catch the very beginning of this? And now, compelled by the Spirit, led by God, led by Christ, I am going to Jerusalem. That's what he says. Can you imagine knowing that this was what was ahead of you whenever you got ready to go to a different town, a different city, wherever you're going? This is what was ahead of you. Paul understood that these trials to which he's referring here in these verses, they were part of the will of God for him. Why? To make him a better Christian. So we all must understand that when we make decisions in faith, that are based on faith, that are based on God and God's will, and it gets difficult, don't be surprised. First, we know and we understand, and I thought this was brought out real well in the first message, that we have an enemy that immediately goes to war against you and me. Because we have said yes to this religion, we said yes to the big target on our back. And Satan's fiery darts are perfectly zeroed in on that target, and he's shooting. Secondly, God will allow our purpose, our drive, us to be tested. Think about what he did or went through with Abraham. It wasn't to the very end, when Abraham was ready to kill Isaac, that God said, "Now I know." He wants us to deepen our faith. He wants you and I to be committed. And he wants to know. He has to know, beyond a shadow of a doubt, that no matter what happens in our life, you and I, brethren, will remain faithful to him, to his way of life, for all the rest of our days. That's what he wants to know. You know, I would submit that probably the biggest thing God is doing in each one of our lives right now is teaching every one of us to trust him. And he does that in very, very many ways. Every one of us is different, and every way he does it's different. But that's what he's doing. He's teaching us to trust him. So faith in him a lot of times will lead us through difficult times and not around difficult times. I'm not going to turn it, but you can read all of James. It talks about our trials and our difficulties that we go through. And he says, count it all joy. But notice the encouragement that we see. Let's go to Isaiah chapter 43. Isaiah chapter 43, read verses 2 and 3 here. Notice the instruction we see. When you pass through the waters, I will be with you, and through the rivers, they will not overwhelm you. When you walk through the fire, you shall not be burned, and the flame shall not consume you, for I am the Lord your God, the Holy One of Israel, your Savior. I gave Egypt for your ransom, Ethiopia and Saba in your place. Our first thought might be that we want God to take us around the waters, build a bridge for us to walk over the waters, get us away from the fire. But a lot of times, brethren, God takes us through those waters. He lets us get a little heated. Why? Well, to show us his grace and his mercy and his love is deeper than those waters. And his presence, he says, I'll never leave you or forsake you. His presence is stronger than the fire. He wants you and I to be able to trust him in absolutely any situation, the little ones and the big ones. This is what true faith does for you and I. It leads us through the difficult times that we face now and will face in the future. Now, looking back at Matthew chapter 14, we read this earlier, verse 25, he says, Matthew 14, verse 25, "And in the fourth watch of the night he came to them, walking on the sea." Did you see that right there? It says, "In the fourth watch of the night he came to them." So this means somewhere roughly between 3 and 6 a.m. How do we get that? Well, you don't have to turn there, but a reference is Mark 13, verse 35. In Mark 13, verse 35, we see four different times represented. I'll read it to you. Mark 13, verse 35 says, "Therefore, keep watch, because you do not know when the owner of the house will come back, whether in the evening or at midnight or when the cock crows or at dawn." So there's four different times represented here. Now, if you go back and look at some biblical history, the consensus here is evening was from 6 to 9 p.m. And then the time from then until midnight was the 12 o'clock hour. And then the time that the cock crowed was usually from 12 to 3 in the morning. And then dawn was 3 to 6. Now these are approximate times. So getting back to the story here, it tells us that they had been battling this storm now for probably at least 6 hours, maybe a little longer. So what we see is the fact that Jesus did not come immediately. He let them fight the storm for most of the night before he came. I think that's very interesting. Look at verse 26. Matthew 14, verse 26. "But when the disciples saw him walking on the sea, they were terrified, and they said, 'It is a ghost.' And they cried out in fear. But immediately Jesus spoke to them." And this is what he said, "Take heart, it is I. Don't be afraid." Okay, so let's take a look at this for a minute. We just noticed that he didn't come immediately. Probably 6 hours plus, he allowed them to bounce around on the Sea of Galilee. And then when he does come, he comes walking by at a distance so close that they can see him and they can hear him. Think about it. They're in the middle of a storm here, and the wind's blowing and howling. You know how it is when a big storm comes up and the wind blows. It's hard to hear. So he had to be close enough that they could recognize his voice and see who he was. But you notice what he didn't do. He didn't get right up and hop in the boat and say, "It's okay. I'm here. You're saved. Everything's fine." He didn't do that. Hold your place here and take a quick look at Mark chapter 6. Mark chapter 6. This is a parallel account of this event. Mark chapter 6, verse 48. Mark 6, verse 48 says, "Then he saw them straining at rowing, for the winds was against them. Now about the fourth watch of the night, he came to them, walking on the sea, and would have passed them by." You ever noticed that before? Doesn't that seem just a little odd? They're struggling for their lives. And Jesus Christ's actions here basically issued an "I'll see you on the other side" perspective. Well, here's the thing. To get help, to get Christ's help, to get God's help, you have to call out. At that point, they didn't. Here's a quick lesson. Never overlook human initiative in gaining the help of God as we go through our struggles, big or small. Never overlook. It doesn't matter how little we think it is or how big we think it is. God is there. But he does expect us to ask. He expects us to take it before him. You know, I really appreciate this example that's given to us here in Matthew and Mark. Did you notice there in verse 26 that they did cry out, but they did not cry out in faith? And it says it right there. They cried out in fear, which is at best weak faith. But you know what? Christ answered them anyway. Do we understand what this is showing us? This shows us very clearly that God is compassionate. He's a compassionate Father who responds to His children when they call out. If they're having a bad day, if they've let down, if they've grown weak, they cry out and He listens. He responds. As a matter of fact, we're told in Psalms 50. Psalms 50, verse 15. Psalms 50, verse 15 says, "Call upon me in the day of trouble." He says, "I will deliver you, and you will glorify me." We're told to do this. Now, just as you got there, we'll go back to Matthew 14. So we'll pick the story back up here in Matthew 14. Verse 28, "And Peter answered him, Lord, if it is you..." So right there was still some question in Peter's mind. He said, "Lord, if it is you, command me to come out to you on the water." In verse 9 he says, "Come." Notice Jesus did not fix the disciples' problems here by making the storm go away, by calming the seas. He could have. He could have spoke, and the seas would have listened, but he didn't do that. Instead, what did he do here? Well, he gave Peter a command. He said, "Come. Come to me." I think that's another very strong lesson for each and every one of us. When we're experiencing difficulties, big or small, maybe instead of asking God to fix the difficulty, maybe we need to start asking God, "What is your command?" Now, there's absolutely nothing wrong with asking Him to fix the problem, fix the situation. But first, we should be asking Him, "What is the command?" In other words, "What would you have me do? What is your will for me in this situation?" We have to stop demanding and start listening. And that's one of the lessons we see here. So Peter, he got out of the boat, and he walked on the water. And he came to Christ. And look at verse 30. "But when he saw the wind, he was afraid and began to sink. And he cried out, Lord, save me." You know, there's a time for long prayers and there's a time for short prayers. When we're sinking in the waves, the short prayer probably will suffice. Now, I say that, but this absolutely goes back to our individual personal relationship with God the Father. Do we have a close enough relationship with Him that a short prayer will work? That's between us and God. It is personal. Verse 31, notice what Christ did. Jesus immediately reached out His hand. And He was always close. He's always is close in difficulty. He says, "I will never leave you or forsake you." Immediately he reached out his hand and he took hold of him, of Peter, and he said, "Oh, ye of little faith, why did you doubt?" So why is this story in the Bible? Why is it here? We should always ask these type of questions. What lesson or lessons can I learn from these stories in the Bible? They seem basic enough, right? Well, this story is not in here to inspire each and every one of us to actually walk on water. When I asked you that, that was just a hypothetical question, rhetorical question. I hope you didn't think we're going to see a miracle up here or out there. The story is here to show us how to continue what we start in faith, how to grow stronger in that faith, and never quit. Yes, God is there, and He's going to be there, but we can't quit. We can't let down. We can't even back off a little bit. So here's the lessons. Initial faith, it's a good start. It's not enough. It's a start, and it's as it should be. But we need that staying faith, if you will, that sustaining faith, that faith that grows, that only we can, between us and our relationship with God, can grow and can be stronger. We need that faith to keep us going, especially when these storms of life hits us. When Jesus said to Peter at the end, "Oh, you of little faith, why did you doubt?" He's not talking about the intensity of Peter's faith. He's talking about the duration, the enduring of Peter's faith. Can you say Peter lost faith? Well, maybe for a minute. At the very least, Peter let down. Peter took his eyes off of the goal. Peter's faith, when it started, though, was very strong. We talked about that early on. He was the only one that got out of the boat. Right? He was the only one that stood up and questioned. It just didn't last long enough. Not that night. Initial faith is a good start, but we have to have sustaining faith. It has to keep going in the highs and lows of life. We have to keep the sustaining faith. Another lesson that we can see here is the fact that we find this kind of faith, this sustaining faith, at the very same place that we find our initial faith. That doesn't change. It just builds. But it is our responsibility to make that happen. So where did Peter's initial faith come from in this situation? Well, there's two places as we look at the story that you can see. First, it was a vision of Christ. He saw Christ. He recognized Christ. When Jesus says in verse 27, He says, "Take heart, it is I." In the Greek, that is, if I pronounce this right, ego eimi. That means I am. This was the name of God. He said, "Don't be afraid, I am." Peter saw that the great I am was standing on the top of everything that Peter was terrified of. He was walking on this raging sea. The other lesson we see here is Jesus' command. You know, Peter figured that it was more important, and this is a good way to figure it was more important to obey Christ's command than to focus on the circumstances around. And for that brief moment, that's what Peter did. The great I am is on top of those raging waves with that wind blowing. Peter's focus was on whom he was walking out to. The command to come. That's what Peter was doing. It's important to see and understand that from a spiritual point of view, Peter is not so much walking on water as he was walking on every promise that God offered at that point. He's not so much standing on the waves, this raging waves, as he was staying on the very character of Jesus Christ. This is the very same offer that everyone in this room has. God the Father and Jesus Christ offer us. It's the very same thing. It was when Peter took his eyes off of those two things that he started to sink. In verse 30, "But when he saw the wind, he was afraid, and he began to sink, and he cried out." The point is that when we focus on the Word, that's the Word of God, but it's also God, the Word, then you and I, brother, we'll walk on water, figuratively speaking. But when we focus on the waves, then we will fall and we will sink. Notice a little secret to this passage. It's not really a secret. But the point of this passage is not to demonstrate the greatness or the weakness of Peter's faith, although it does that very well. The point is to demonstrate the greatness of God's grace, love, and mercy. when I was reading parallel accounts in Mark and John, I noticed that Mark's chapter 6 account did not mention the part about Peter getting out of the boat, and didn't mention anything about him walking on water and sinking. Only about Jesus Christ coming to them on top of the waves. That's Mark's account. Mark was Peter's traveling companion. And Bible scholars tell all of us that the Gospel of Mark is essentially Peter's preaching notes. And maybe that's true. Maybe that's the case. So at first I thought, well, maybe Peter doesn't really want anybody to know about his wavering faith. Well, we can understand that. Maybe Peter was a little embarrassed. Maybe he was a little ashamed of what happened. But after a little more study, I think there's a different reason. Peter doesn't want the focus on him at all, because this story is not about Peter. It's not about Peter's faith. It's about Jesus Christ. It's about his faithfulness and his example for every one of us. When we look deeper, we'll see that's what this is about. Peter wants us to know that Christ is always close in the good times and the bad times. When we call out to him, even if it's in fear, we saw that. Fear from lack of faith, fear from stubbing our toe, he helps. Psalms 94 and verse 18 is a reference scripture I'll read to you. Psalms 94, 18 says, "When I said, my foot is slipping, your steadfast love, O Lord, supported me." Our God is a God who will always be there to catch us. He will always be there to pick us up, and he'll always be there to lift us up on top of the waves of life. So when we waver, we absolutely must put our eyes, get our focus back on him, and keep it there. That's where it has to be directed. It goes back to our priorities. You know, another lesson from this story is the fact that we can always and should always trust God without question. In anything. That's everything. The little things, the big things. Someone once said that in this story here, Peter may have failed at what he set out to do, but Jesus Christ succeeded in proving exactly what he wanted to prove. And that is the fact that he is always trustworthy. He's always there. You know, ultimately, brethren, God's purpose in the Christian life, it's our life, you and me, is to teach each and every one of us to trust him. It goes back down to that. In Peter's first letter to the church, you might join me there, in 1 Peter 1, he writes to Christians there going through their own storms of life. 1 Peter 1, verse 6. First Peter 1, verse 6 says, "In this you greatly rejoice, though now for a little while, if need be, you have been grieved by various trials, that the genuineness of your faith, being much more precious than gold that perishes, though is tested by fire, may be found to praise, honor, and glory at the revelation of Jesus Christ." So initial faith is an absolutely great beginning. It's where we all need to start. Then we need to grow. We need to grow into that sustaining faith, that faith that will help us endure to the end, to get us through the big storms of life. So where does that leave us? We finished this story. Where does that leave us on an individual basis? Well, it's not uncommon for a Christian to start off strong and be on fire for the truth. And then, as time goes on, years and years down the road even, they sometimes lose that little spark. And they inadvertently begin to slow down spiritually. It happens to, I would dare say, all of us from time to time. But this is where we have to re-embrace godly character. This is where we have to rehear His command for us. And we very strongly and boldly have to take that next step. Think of Peter's faith in this first step, in his first step of faith. And that's exactly the same kind of faith that we have and need to have to be able to take that next step. So how can we summarize this topic today? Well, I want to give you 6 one-liners. They're not 6 points for all you from Portsmouth who know I do a lot of points. I'm not calling them 6 points. They're 6 one-liners. Number one is, spend time in God's presence. Simple. Spend time in God's presence. As we read when we started in Matthew 14 there, Christ didn't go off on his own and then decide to pray. Prayer was his sole intent to go off. He already had his thoughts to spend time with God. And so what did he do? He removed all distractions. He sent the disciples one way, he sent the crowd the other way, and he went to the top of the mountain. This requires you and I, brethren, to become very disciplined in our spiritual life. We have to work on it. Number two, face up to your fears and deal with them. Christ doesn't want anyone to be scared. Fear paralyzes us. And we look back in Matthew 14 here, we read that word immediately. Immediately Christ spoke to them. I want to quote to you Isaiah 41 verse 10. Isaiah 41 verse 10 says this, "Do not fear, for I am with you. Do not be afraid, for I am your God. I will strengthen you. I will surely help you. I will uphold you with my right hand of righteousness." Why was Peter the only one to face up to his fear? Why was Peter the only one? What would have happened if all 12 would have got out of the boat? Would all of them have been able to walk on water? Maybe Peter would not have sunk. You know, we're told many times through Scripture, and we're encouraged, especially Hebrews encourages us, to lift up one another, encourage one another, support one another. We're to build each other up. What if? It's always going to be a question. Number three, respond to his call. In Matthew 14, verse 29, Christ told Peter, he said, come. He said, come. So the short answer is, we are to respond when he calls. Don't put things off. When God gives us something to do, I guarantee you it's going to be a big deal. It might not seem like it is right now, but it is going to be a big deal. So don't hesitate. Number four, don't get distracted. Peter was distracted by the wind, not the waves. He said the wind is what got his attention, drew his attention away. He was fine walking on this water, this rough, choppy water, but he got distracted by other external influences. It could happen to any of us at any time. Number five, turn to Christ when we mess up. Turn to Christ when we mess up. I go back to that word immediately. I love the immediately expression that he used throughout this story. Christ won't let us go through what we can't handle. He tells us that. We must not forget to turn to him. We have to ask. Peter said at the end of verse 30, he said, "Lord, save me." Sometimes with us, you know, God might reach out his hand and we won't take it. We feel so bad that we think that we must be the one to sort this out. When in fact, only God can sort it out. Don't be afraid to ask. Turn to him. And then finally, number six, give God the glory. When they got to the shore, nobody commented on how brave Peter was for walking on the water. Especially Peter. He didn't talk about that. They just talked about Christ walking on the water. They were glorifying Christ. So let's conclude here. We don't experience faith so much by sitting around and dreaming up grand dreams. It doesn't do much for us spiritually. But faith does come by each and every one of us taking action, by moving forward and taking that next step. And that next step's different in all of our lives. But we have to take that next step. And the bottom line is this. If we want to walk on water, figuratively, we absolutely have to get out of the boat. There's no way around it. You have to get out of the boat. I read a couple quotes recently. Now, the author is unknown, but here is what those quotes said. I thought they were very, very interesting. It says, there is only one line in life that you can control, and it's not the finish line. It is the starting line. Simple, but makes perfect sense. And then the other one is related to that. It says, even big finishes begin with a small start. Of the 12 disciples, only Peter had the courage to take this step. He knew this was going to be tough. He knew something supernatural was going to have to happen in order for him to be successful of what he was getting ready to do. He knew that. But he saw Jesus doing it. And there's the difference. He saw the example of Christ. So he knew that there was hope. He took that step out of the boat, trusting that Jesus Christ would not let him down. And he didn't. Brother, this is the same thing that you and I can do. We have to take that step out of the boat and trust that Jesus Christ will be there for us and carry us. And he will. Look at his example. Peter here accomplished something greater than any other human being has ever done. He actually walked on water. So, brother, I leave you with this question. Are we ready to walk on water?